Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Here's our topic for this morning. Some nice instructions from scripture and from our acharyas on acting or striving to act, being in the consciousness of having no false ego. Could you do me a favor, Raghava Chaitanya? Could you not use that little device that you hold up all the time? It's very distracting. Thank you. This word, Namaha, is part of our devotional life. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. If you look for it, you'll find it all over the place. Namaha. And it has a very important meaning, something that Sanatana Goswami recommends in Hari Bhakti Vilas, is when we're reciting mantra, along with reciting the mantra and memorizing the mantra and speaking it properly, it's important to meditate upon the meaning and, using Prabhupada's language, enter into the spirit of. He speaks those words in relation to Brahma Samhita. One should recite them regularly and enter into the spirit of this hymn. That's his words. So the spirit of Namaha is without false ego. And we're going to hear something about that this morning. And it connects with one of the topics that we discussed yesterday evening. One of those topics that we discussed yesterday evening was, the main topic was, receiving empowerment. Somebody that knows how to deal gently with children can let the children know that they can't play the drum during class upstairs. Who knows how to gently deal with children? Oh, Mukunda, good. Receiving empowerment, Krishna Shakti, Vina Nahi Tara Pravartana. In order to carry out some service that you're trying to do, you've been asked to do, it's assigned to you, your prescribed duty, it's essential, it's imperative to receive empowerment to do that. Now, supposing you're not Krishna conscious. Supposing you're Ravana. Ravana received empowerment to do what Ravana did. But he wasn't Krishna conscious. He was very conscious of Ram, but not Krishna conscious. He wasn't Krishna bhakti. So bhakti includes recognizing the necessity to be empowered to carry out our service, because otherwise we'll act through false ego. It's default. You know, a one or a zero. Either you're, so there's in between, there's degrees of acting in false ego and acting without false ego. Ravana is way over on that end, and we're somewhere in between, and then there's the pure devotee position. And striving for that goal of pure devotion requires becoming freed from false ego. It's abundantly discussed in Bhagavad Gita, not a foreign concept to us from spiritual life. But spiritual life entails entering into the mood of namaha. So that's our topic. We heard yesterday two different instructions, empowering instructions that Lord Chaitanya gave. One was take the instructions of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, receive it, and distribute it to people throughout the world, and this way become guru. And then another instruction was the chanting of my holy name will be heard in every town and village throughout the world. So great souls have faith that simply because Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote like this, because Lord Chaitanya said it will happen, it's gonna happen. There has been time separating from when Lord Chaitanya said it, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur attempted, and Bhaktisiddhanta further tempted, and Srila Prabhupada further fulfilled, and it's now going on. Just yesterday, when I reached the airport in Chicago, what do you call that? You know, where the luggage comes out, conveyor belt number 6, whatever you call that thing. Baggage claim number 6, yeah. So, you know, they have those signs that change. I was very surprised, and I'm going to share with our GBCs in Chicago, in China, an advertisement in English, but also with some Chinese script, for tourism to Shenyang. Now, I know where Shenyang is on the map, and I've even been to Shenyang, but I was really surprised that they're making a tourism advertisement in Chicago for visiting Shenyang. You ever heard of the place before? But, you know, they want you to know about it and go there. It's a promotion, a tourism promotion. They're spending money in Chicago to get people to go to Shenyang. So we have more than like a travel advertisement to go to the spiritual world. We have instructions that the chanting of the holy name should be heard all over the world. And people should hear the message of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam as given to us by Lord Chaitanya all over the world. So to do that requires empowerment. I'm going to tell a little story, one I've said many, many times, because I've heard it many times from Buddy Narayan Swami. Some of you are from the Detroit area, so you probably heard this from me several times. Buddy Narayan Swami was the president of a preaching center at Ann Arbor, University of Michigan. And Prabhupada was visiting in Detroit, so he had the privilege of going on the morning walks every morning and going out in the car and coming back. Prabhupada was looking out the window and said each day, that is the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. He said it every day, coming and going. And so finally one devotee asked, Prabhupada, when you're looking out the window and you're saying this, what is it that you see? And this is what he saw. The Sherwin-Williams logo of a bucket of paint covering the world. Ah, that is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. So to do that, you got to have empowerment. And we've mentioned, it's not like you have to get in an airplane and travel around the world and go to Shenyang. And there's already devotees in Shenyang. For your information, I conduct an annual japa retreat in Shenyang. And about 50 people come. And then, you know, they're teaching other people. So it's happening slowly. But it requires empowerment. It's just, it's a service. And if you're going to be empowered, then you can't be in false ego. Because you're in false ego, you're not going to receive empowerment. You're going to think, I'm the doer. It's part of empowerment is to let go of false ego. But, you know, false ego has a very strong hold on us. It's not easy to let go. And so, how to let go, that's this Sharanagati. That's what we're going to be discussing. The Sharanagati is a means. It's describing the elements or the principles of taking full shelter, Sharana. Everyone knows the verse. Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam Sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishyami masuchaha. Sharana is surrender or taking shelter, and agati is moving to that position, attaining the position of sharana. And we heard and discussed, so I'm doing again, from the Govinda Raja's commentary on Ramayana. Some of you are very familiar with this because you've heard the recordings, but if not, you can hear the recordings coming up. We'll be discussing it tomorrow morning during initiation also. This 1866 Bhagavad Gita is one of the verses, one of the mantras that Sri Vaishnavas receive at the time of Diksha. There's a nice devotee couple I know that they didn't receive some of the other ones, but they just received that one from a guru and said, say it every day. Not three times a day, but this 1866 Bhagavad Gita. Because the essence of taking shelter is expressed in that verse, and that's what one does when one gets that connection through spiritual master. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught this process of Sharanagati. It's found right within Chaitanya Charitamrita. And there's six angas or limbs. Anukoyasya sankalpa, pratikoyasya varjanam, that's the first two. Accepting things favorable, rejecting things unfavorable for taking shelter of Krishna or bhakti. Accepting favorable, reject things unfavorable. Rakshishatite, feel oneself to be protected by the personality of Godhead in all circumstances. Gopritve varanam, accepting him as one's Lord and Master. Atma nikshepa, dedication of everything, body, mind, and words to the service of the Lord. And karpanye, humility. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes his Sharanagati songs, he starts with the last one first. or in this list at least, the last one is karpanye, or dainya, he uses that word. Humility, because you don't surrender if you're not humble. And shadvidha, sharanagati. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has an elaborate presentation on this topic, because it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and so our acharyas have abundantly commented on it. Gopritve Varanam, he says, he writes, is the angi, or the principal anga, and the others are secondary. You know, the language is Swarupa and Tatastha, primary and secondary. Angi, and the others are angas of the angi. And this Goptritve Varanam is discussed in a number of places. Here's from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Jiva Dharma. It's complete dependence on the Lord. He's the master. I'm the servant. This is like Prahlad Maharaja's rendering in his prayer to Lord Nrisingadeva. You're the master. I'm the servant. And there's nothing else between us. I'm completely dependent upon the Lord. Thinking that his own effort alone will never make him capable of succeeding in anything. Now that's in direct contradiction to false ego. Acting in false ego is, I'm going to do it. And we're all trained up in that consciousness since we're kids. Yes? You do really well in school. You can do it. Rah, rah, rah. And if you don't do it, you know, what's wrong with you? So anyway, reward and punishment for be the doer. And we're rewarded for being, you know, thinking that we're the doer. And, it, you know, it's all over the world. It's in different cultures expressed in different ways. When I grew up, once upon a time I grew up, and there's this saying in America called the Protestant ethic. Those of you that are American, you know about the Protestant ethic. And the Protestant ethic, it, as far as I understand, it comes from the pilgrims that came to America seeking freedom from the oppression of the Catholic Church. So they wanted to be able to protest the Catholic Church's ways of doing things and find their own freedom. So the Protestant ethic says, work hard and you can achieve anything. Depending upon God, but work hard and you can achieve anything. That's false ego. So we're going to explore that topic a bit because we want empowerment to fulfill some higher purpose that is given to us by some aporusheya, transcendental personality source. And even the little steps to get to that transcendental goal requires empowerment, requires namaha. And being completely dependent upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I'm going to read a little bit. This is Jiva Goswami's commentary on this Sharanagati verse. He says that it's from Vayupurana. Now, I've been saying consistently it's from Padma Purana, but I haven't been able to find the reference that was the basis of my saying that. I'm sure it's somewhere. But Vayupurana, that's Jiva Goswami. And he refers to the Padma Purana verse where this Atma Nikshepa That was number 5 out of the 6. It's the same as Namaha. He's giving elaboration on these 6 angas. So here's what he says about Namaha. There we go. Quoting Padma Purana, Ma represents ahankar and Na represents negation of ahankar. Thus, by uttering Namaha, so when we're chanting Nama Om Vishnu Padaya or Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya or any of the other mantras or recitations that have Namaha, there's many, many. Meditating upon the meaning of Namaha, one negates one's independent attitude, which is similar to what Bhaktivinoda said about Goptritve Varnanam. The jiva is, this is a quotation, this is a translation of a Padma Purana verse explaining the word Namaha. The jiva is dependent on the Lord. He lives with dependence. Therefore, one should completely reject the idea of accomplishing by one's own capacity. Nothing is left to be accomplished by the ability of the Lord. Nice way to say it. Nothing is left to be accomplished by the ability of the Lord. Consigning one's body to the Lord, one should serve him. So, little sharing, just taking this statement and giving a little example. Question somebody asked one time, and it's in a particular way. Could you help me understand why it is that when I am submitting a question and get an answer to that question, I feel very connected to the message? However, after some time, it dissipates. Could you explain why that happens again and again and again? So the answer goes like this. False ego. We're thinking, oh, here's a problem. Here's the solution to the problem. I'm going to go do it. Because that's how we're trained. Go do it. Get it done. And then when you act through false ego, we're going to hear some more about this, so be prepared. When you act through false ego, the spiritual potency dissipates. Spiritual consciousness becomes covered by false ego, and that spiritual shakti, Krishna shakti, becomes dissipated by I'm going to do it. What happened? It's our dear friend. False ego just robbed spiritual potency. Supposing you don't have false ego. Just supposing. Close your eyes and imagine not having false ego. You won't have that experience. You'll stay connected to Krishna Shakti. So, our own false ego is a formidable enemy of spiritual strength. Therefore, we cultivate the mood of Namaha. A few other references that are essentially saying the same thing. We're going to hear it again tomorrow. But Govinda Raja, when I say Govinda Raja, he is the commentator on Ramayana that is in the line of Sri Vaishnava Acharyas and wrote the most comprehensive and scripturally supported commentary on Ramayana. So when one receives mantra in Sri Vaishnava tradition, Govinda Raja explains, this word namaha is there in each of the mantras, and namaha means, may I not have the feeling of doing things for myself. That's a negation. The positive is, who do you do it for if it's not for yourself? We're saying, I'm going to say the same thing in a lot of different ways, but you know, acting, chapter 3, Bhagavad Gita, what to do about the fact that when you do something, there's a reaction for that something that you do. Well, there's a reaction for that something that you do if you consider yourself to be the cause of the result and therefore the enjoyer of the result. Prabhupada's term is fruitive activity. What's the goal of fruitive activity? To get a result. And what's the goal of getting the result? Be the enjoyer of the result, because I did it. It's mine. I'm entitled to enjoy what's mine. And we're bound, my dear devotees. We're trying to be devotees, but we're also bound by fruitive intention in doing what we do. Even doing the devotional service that we do, we're bound by that intention. It's the wrong intention. It's a covered intention. It's not what bhakti really is. So bhakti becomes covered. The happiness of bhakti, the illumination of bhakti is obscured from us, just like the sky right now. Lots of clouds, not a whole lot of light in the sky. There's some light in the sky. That's our bhakti at our present stage. It's there, but it's covered by this fruitive intention. You want to change the microphone?
It's running out of battery.
May I not have the feeling of doing things for myself. Namaha. It goes well with Goptritve Varanam. You're the Lord. You're the object of pleasure. And like this discussion yesterday, this nice mother saying devotee, saying, is my real happiness to feel full, then I can become, when I'm feeling full, I can deal with unpleasant things and people saying harsh stuff or bad circumstances, and I'm okay because I'm feeling full. Should I aspire for feeling full? Remember? I discussed that. So, aspire for being in the mood of service. And an obstacle in the mood of service is thinking I'm doing things for myself. Namaha. Another similar example, Canto 2, Chapter 9. That's where Brahma comes before the personality of Godhead, Vishnu, when it's still total darkness. He's on the lotus flower that come from the stem, that come from the body of Garbhadaksha Vishnu, and it's darkness in all directions. You can just hear some splashing of the waves of the Garbhadak ocean. That's about it. And he tries to climb down to find where the stem comes from. He can't find the end. He hears tapa. He goes back. He does his tapa. And right in this ocean of darkness, the personality of Godhead appears in his fullness, with all of his shaktis, the whole, you know, the spiritual world, in its, what's the word? Like Antarjweep, you know, the center, the center of the flower of the universe. Anyway, so Lord, he comes before Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu greets him. In this case, the Brahma that's being spoken of has a relationship of friendship, Sakya Rasa. The Lord stands, Lord Vishnu stands and extends his hand to shake hands with Brahma. Welcome. I want to give you a benediction. Tell me what you would like. So he's very intelligent. He asks for several things. But one of the things he asks for is, I'm going to be doing this creation very soon, and please free me from the false ego of thinking that I'm the creator of the universe. Rather, I'm simply a dependent instrument of your will to create, bring the creation about. Please protect me from false ego. This is Namaha. I shall be occupied in your service. I pray that all this may not give rise to pride, as if I were the supreme. Because part of the thing with doership is you become the owner of that which you do, that's material consciousness. When you think like that, then you're bound by the fruits of your work. You're bound to material consciousness. You're bound to karma. And the true self is covered. Thinking this is spiritual. I mean, it's heading in a good direction, but it's not complete yet. And then one feels pride. Look what I have. One feels envy. No, I don't have. Someone else has. You feel envy and pride arising from false ego, arising from thinking you're independent. But we want to let go of that or negate that sense of independence. Here's another nice reference that I appreciated very much from reading Govindaraja's commentary, or a portion of it. And this takes place in Panchavati. Some of you know Panchavati. We went there. You'll see pictures if you get this little flash drive of where Panchavati is. And Panchavati was a place that was assigned by Agastya to Ram, Sita, and Lakshman to reside the final portion of their stay in the Dandak forest. So they went there, and a very beautiful, serene place, and Ram says to Lakshman, you please identify a place that's suited for you, for me, for Sita, and for you. And Lakshman is uncomfortable with hearing that. So he uses the word paravan asmi, which means I'm a dependent entity. Please don't ask me to identify a place that's suited for me, because I'm not an independent entity, I'm a dependent entity. You please say what is suited for you, because I'm not an independent entity. Paravan asmi. Govindaraj explains that this was Ram's way of mildly rebuking Lakshman. It's subtle, but he then makes reference to way back in the Ayodhya Kanda when Ram informs Lakshman that he's not going to become king and he's going to the forest. And Lakshman does what Lakshman is characteristically does. Don't do it. Anybody that wants you to go, just give me the order and I'll slaughter them all. You're going to become the king and I'll be by your side and who can stop you? Just give me the order. And Ram checks him and says, I'm going to the forest. So then Lakshman's mood changes and says, let me go with you. And the words written by Valmiki are, Aham sarvam karishyami jagrita swapatash cha. This aham sarvam karishyami sounds nice. Its translation is, I shall do the work. I shall do all the work for you. I shall do is false ego. No, it's common speech in our English language. I'll take care of it, Prabhu, don't worry. Or, you know, I'm going to, whatever it is, I'm going to go to school and get 4.0. Or I'm going to, you know, whatever it is, I'm going to go to the kitchen and cook a nice offering. It's just part of our regular conversational English. But Ram, according to Govinda Raja, Ram didn't say anything at the time. But he wanted to correct Lakshman from that false ego consciousness. So he did it much later, and he did it in this form of saying, very subtle, find a place and build a cottage that's suited for me, for Sita, and for you. When Lakshman said, Aham sarvam krishyami, even a slight feeling of, I will do something, that is, independent of Ram's pleasure or directives or will, contemplating action through false ego, Ram doesn't approve. Some of you are familiar, probably, with Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Sanatan and Rupa Goswami were taking shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They gave up their aristocratic position and all their wealth, etc., etc., and sought the association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sanatan Goswami was put in jail. He's bribed his way out of the jailkeeper's position and went searching for Lord Chaitanya. And he found him. On his way, Sanatan Goswami came across his brother-in-law. His brother-in-law saw him in his condition. He gave him a nice chadar. And when Sanatan Goswami came before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had a beard like a Muslim. So Lord Chaitanya said, make him gentle. Shave him. And then Lord Chaitanya continued to look at his chadar. Sanatan Goswami, being very intelligent and a minister, he could understand without any words that Lord Chaitanya didn't approve. So that very day when he went to take his bath at the river, he saw a mendicant had his old tattered cloth upper garment stretched out, drying in the sun. And Sanatan Goswami appealed to him, please accept this chadar in exchange for your torn quilt. And the man said, don't make fun of me, this isn't nice. You're a gentleman, and you don't make fun of sadhus like this, please. He said, no, I'm not making fun, I mean it, I just like to exchange this for that. So when he came back, wearing the torn quilt instead of the nice chadar, Lord Chaitanya said, very good, because you're on this path of renunciation, and you were attached. So a good physician, this is Lord Chaitanya's words, a good physician not only frees a patient from a particular disease, but he goes all the way so that that disease will not appear again. So you've done the right thing. Now, it doesn't mean if you have a nice chatter, you have to give it away. But it's a principle that Lord Chaitanya was teaching to Sanatana Goswami. You're going in the direction of detachment. Do it completely. So in this Namaha topic, with Lord Ram wanting Lakshman, so he's instructing, Lakshman's not a conditioned soul like us, but Lord Ramachandra was correcting him, and he understood. There's another nice reference that is really far out with Sita. This is again Govinda Raj explaining like this. Very important in Ram's Leela was Sita being kidnapped by Ravan. Now, it could have happened some other way, but it's part of the Leela of Lord Ramachandra. And for that to happen, Sita is put in a position where she, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, eternally connected to the Narayana, or to Lord Ramachandra, as Hanuman expresses in a prayer in Canto 5, just as there's no question of sunlight being separated from the sun, there's no question of Sita being separated from Ram. It's not possible. He doesn't elaborate, but the elaboration is, it's a Leela. And there's a purpose to the Leela. There's multiple purposes to Leelas. And one of those purposes, in this case, according to Govinda Raj, is Sita, for the first time in her life, she has a desire that's a false ego desire, which is not thinking of what Ram wants, thinking of what she wants. She wants the deer. And so she expresses her desire, not thinking what Ram wants, thinking what she wants, according to Govinda Raj. This is a behavior like us. You know, a soul that has a connection with Bhagavan and a separate desire other than the interest of Bhagavan. And, Govinda Raj writes, when Lakshman, acting like the position of Guru, corrects her and says, that's not a deer, that's Maricha. He says it specifically, because it was known that Maricha had mystic powers, one of which was he could assume different forms, and one of those forms he was notoriously known to assume was a form of a deer. There's details. It's Maricha. Don't go for it. And what was Sita's response? She just ignored him. Like the brahmanas who ignored the cowherd boys when they came for requesting on behalf of Balaram and Krishna something to eat. The brahmanas just ignored them. They didn't even say, you know, look, we're busy in the yajna, come talk to us after the yajna. Just like they didn't even exist. She just ignored Lakshman as if he didn't even exist and went on saying, I want the deer. And she even said, if you can't capture the deer, you can shoot the deer, and then the deer skin, Ram and I can sit on. when we're back in Ayodhya. Is that Sita? That's not Sita. It's a soul thinking, here's an object for my enjoyment. My senses are seeing an object, perceiving an object, and I want to enjoy that object. She's acting as if she's a conditioned soul. And because of that, she has a problem. And because of her problem, according to Govindaraj, one of the dimensions of Ram's sorrow is to see the plight of a soul that has gone astray from the position of shelter of Bhagavan. And he is in so much anxiety. This is our Sri Vaishnava Acharya's teaching us that this is the position of the personality of Godhead. He wants the living entity, us, to be with him once again. You know, Prabhupada said it this way, you take one step towards Krishna and he takes 100 steps towards you. That is to say, Krishna really wants us to take shelter. Not because he's lonely. He wants our happiness. He wants our happiness more than we can, we want our own happiness. We don't even know what happiness is either. We have the wrong idea. So he wants us to have the right idea and wants us to have real happiness. And what an ordeal he goes through, Ram goes through to retrieve Sita. And what an ordeal, we go through our ordeal, but what is Krishna going through to help bring us to him? You know, we don't think like that because we're self-centered. But think about it. Think about what Prabhupada went through in order to rescue us. And if you know, little light goes on about, and all of our acharyas, it's, you know, it's like a child receives so much affection and love and service from mom and dad. And, you know, the child is not thinking gratitude. Commonly, a child is thinking more. And, you know, maybe saying please and thank you. It's a bhakti principle. Gratitude is a bhakti principle. But without this, we're going to be acting through false ego, and it's just, it's, you know, gratitude is cosmetic. So one last point, and that is, in Jiva Goswami's commentary on this Anukul Yasya Sankalpa, this Sharanagati verse, in his Bhakti Sandarbha, the very next text, because he's describing the principles of bhakti, these are principles of bhakti, Gaut Tritve Varanam, and Rakshishatiti Vishvaso, etc. Karpanye, the humility, submission, Atmanivedana, all of these elements of surrender. The very next one that he chooses in Bhakti Sandarbha to speak about is the principle of taking shelter of spiritual master. This Namaha, he applies immediately next to the spiritual master. Here's what he writes. He makes reference to this nice section of Sudama Brahman story. We discussed this over the winter retreat, so here it is again. When Krishna is with Sudama, and he's, in this particular section, he's speaking with the voice of the personality of Godhead. He treats Sudama like a brahmana, he treats Sudama like a friend, and then he treats Sudama like I'm the personality of Godhead. And he's explaining teachings about the importance of guru, because they're talking about their guru, Sandipani Muni. So there's three verses. My dear friend, he who gives a person his physical birth is his first spiritual master, that's his biological father. And he who initiates him as a twice-born brahmana and engages him in religious duties is indeed more directly his spiritual master. That's what Sudama, Sandipani Muni did. But the person who bestows transcendental knowledge upon the members of all spiritual orders of society as one's ultimate spiritual master, indeed, he is as good as my own self. Certainly, O Brahmana, of all the followers of the Varnashram system, those who take advantage of the words I speak in my form as the spiritual master and thus easily cross over the ocean of material existence, best understand their own welfare. Krishna wants our welfare. Ram wanted Sita to be restored back to him. The personality of Godhead wants us to return back home, back to Godhead, where we went somewhere, went to a dark place. And he sent someone to find us. And fortunately, someone found us. And fortunately, it may have taken a while, but we said, yes. So we're in this making steps, going again back to our original home, our original position, back home, back to Godhead. And so Krishna speaking to Sudama, which means he's speaking to us because Jiva Goswami is having him speak to us about this principle of Namaha, that I don't act independently. I act in conjunction with this descending mercy, connecting with yesterday evening's topic, receiving empowerment. How do we receive empowerment? How does Krishna give himself to others? Krishna, according, we discussed it yesterday, Krishna entrusts himself, he gives power of attorney to his Madhyama Bhaktas and says, you can give me to whoever you like. We discussed this over the winter retreat, Vasudev Dutt. Lord Chaitanya said, again and again, please accept this is true. I am the property of Vasudev Datta. He can sell me at any price. I declare it again and again. He declared it again and again. I am the property of Vasudev Datta. He can sell me at any price. Now, the price, when Lord Chaitanya said something similar to Lord Nityananda, the price he suggested was faith. Some. It can be more, it can be less, somewhere in between. It's some faith. That's the price. To receive the pure holy name, to receive Krishna in his fullness. And it takes faith to do this. And it's an instruction to do it. Repeated and repeated and repeated instruction to do it. And that person who does it knows what their real self-interest is. Again from yesterday. Natte vidu svarta katim hi Vishnu. In this world, people don't know what their real self, sva-artha. That's the real self-interest. Not the material one. The real self-interest. So real self-interest should be aligned with our psychophysical nature, and I have this need, that need, the other need. These things are important to me. Our discussion from yesterday, I'm trying to connect yesterday with this morning with yesterday. Sharanagati. coming to the position of full shelter of the personality of Godhead. We're not there yet, but there's an agati, there's a process. And this is an important one. So it's these two things. Receiving empowerment and trying to carry out that instruction with empowerment without false ego. I'm going to do it. I'm not independent. I'm fully dependent. I, Lakshman, will create a cottage according to your indication. Then later, Ram doesn't give elaborate explanation. But Lakshman is given the intelligence by Super Soul within how to do the detail. And so one of the details, Ram comments later, without my instructing you, you understood my desire. That was his desire. Ram's desire was a very special arrangement for Sita, because here she is in the forest. She's a princess. She's accustomed to royal accommodation. And she voluntarily wanted to go with Ram, but Ram wants, you know, something nice for her. So Ram didn't have to say it. Lakshman understood it. And he compliments Lakshman. You understood my mind. So again, yesterday, how did Rupa Goswami understand the mind of Lord Chaitanya? Lord Chaitanya empowered him. We need empowerment. We need a heart that isn't clouded like the sky this morning with too many clouds. So the illumination of what Krishna wants of us becomes possible. How does that? The mood of service. He's the master, we're the servant. I'm living my life, moving from the place of darkness to the place of light, to simply Krishna's interest is my interest. That happiness is the happiness I want to attain. And this acting independently business is something I have to gradually let go of. The sooner the better. And something has to replace it. The false ego position. The personality of Godhead's happiness. I'm simply the instrument of the personality of Godhead's instruction. That's it. Very simple. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine. Then again, Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschityadesatari. Let me take shelter there and be an instrument to help in that mission, as he is an instrument to help in the mission of Rupa Goswami, who is an instrument to help in the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Let me be connected like that. That's disciplic succession. So, lights, and see if there's some discussion.
It was a very deep class. Can I, I'm just putting an extreme situation. It's nothing that is in my life, but I'm assuming an extreme situation. Let's say a disciple goes to a guru or authorities with a nama intention, and even though he has an intention of namaha, but if guru or authorities has to say against his will or his desire, and It could happen that guru might reject the disciple, or authority might reject the disciple and say, hey, get out of here. I don't want to talk with you. I don't want to deal with you. But still, disciple should be in Namaha situation because that will connect him to the disciplic succession. But if guru reject the disciple, then the disciplic succession is already broken.
No. So, no. Now you're using two representations, the disciple of guru and the authority and the person who's serving under some authority. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur discusses this in Madhurya Kandamani, this very point that you're making. And if that happens, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, the servant should continue serving. And he writes that in time, the displeasure and the mood of displeasure of the master likely will subside when seeing the mood of submission and continued humble position of the servant. And things become restored. Gives a similar example to fever. In that section, it's one has a fever when the very source of what can give strength again is eating. One can't eat because you don't have the power of digestion when you have fever. So you fast. So that's his recommendation. So now, if it is spiritual master, here's a nice example. In Prabhupada's life. two things. Some of you may not know, that there was a Sanskrit, besides Pradyumna, who was Prabhupada's Sanskrit Panditji, that's what he called him, a couple other devotees became proficient in Sanskrit and were performing similar service as Pradyumna was doing. One of them was Nittai. And in course of time, because he was scholarly, he started reading other books. And that led to falling off a cliff. Because when he read other books, he came across things that were not in Prabhupada's teachings, and at one point he asked Prabhupada's permission, can I leave your association? And Prabhupada said, I wasn't there, but something to the effect that get out of here. And called him a snake. And Hari Sori told me later, a part of that story that's not known is that Prabhupada reached out to him several times to have him again take shelter. Prabhupada cried because of that condition. So he wasn't finished, except that he chose, not Prabhupada rejected. He rejected. But he accepted. Another example is Prabhupada's explanation of your ever well-wisher. He signed his letters, your ever well-wisher. So when asked, what was your intention behind that expression, your ever well-wisher, Prabhupada explained on more than one occasion, it means even if one goes away, I will continue to be committed as your well-wisher. So, is it possible for a spiritual master to reject a disciple? Yes. Is it possible for some authority to say, get out of here? Yes. Now, is that like a forever, the person is lost? And then there's the subtext that at least, you know, the qualified spiritual master will never ultimately just reject, like happened with Jamadagni. Maybe you know that history. But anyway, without going into the history, when one is offensive, it's not just the spiritual master will respond by rejecting Krishna. The spiritual master may be fine, and Nama Prabhu may not be fine. So, you want to carry on with your question? Because you usually have a follow-up question to your question.
Perfect answer. Thank you. My last question is, can we use namaha as a synonymous to surrender? Namaha as a synonymous to surrender?
It's an element of surrender. It's the negation of false ego, but surrender is more than negation of false ego. Surrender is take goptrjve varanam. I'm not independent requires I am dependent.
Namaha, we can have a difference in opinion.
You can be an impersonalist and think namaha. Is that all right?
Hare Krishna. You mentioned that the complete dependence on the Lord, thinking that one's own efforts alone is not going to make him capable of succeeding. So I have a question based on that. Trying to formulate the question, so please bear with me. So sometimes I have prayed in the past that, my dear Lord, I require your intervention or your blessing in order to be able to do my work. I also get confused if that is engaging the Lord in my service. So I don't know how to distinguish between depending completely on the Lord and not wanting to engage the Lord in my service. How do I distinguish?
My answer is it depends. And in Govindaraja's explanation of this namaha, he writes that one should not think, oh, I'm being a burden to the Supreme Lord, because I'm dependent upon him and has to, you know, take care of me because I'm dependent upon him. That consciousness is the right consciousness, and the answer is no worries. For me, it's not a problem. You know, Bhagavan responding to that concern. And then the other side of the spectrum is God is my order supplier. So one should be wary of that, rightly so. So it's subtle, it's a question of consciousness. And the consciousness of the mood of service. For whose satisfaction, whose enjoyment is this appeal being made? And you know, in our present condition, it's a mix. And so we want to move towards the unmixed. So your question is apropos. And one should monitor internally. And if you look carefully, when you look carefully at exercise number one from yesterday, it invites that very evaluation. Okay? Yes. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the wonderful explanation. I have a question about that word karpanya.
Yeah.
Here in this verse, Sharanagati verse, it is humility.
Yes.
The one thing that has been going on in my mind is the Bhagavad Gita verse 2.7, Karpanya Doshah Upahata Subhavam. So there the translation is miserly weakness, Karpanya Dosha. So are these two Karpanyas...
I'm not a Sanskrit scholar.
Different?
I'm not a Sanskrit scholar, but I can take a guess, and we're not supposed to guess or conjecture. But there's the material and there's a spiritual aspect of words sometimes, like Maya. So Maya can mean this and Maya can mean that. So that's my conjecture. But I, in order to get a careful reading on your question, I would like to ask a Sanskrit scholar, I know a few, and I'll report back to you after I hear back from them.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Over here on the ladies' side. You're on.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I have to make myself bold to say, ask this question. Like in Sita's case, when she expresses the desire to have the deer, that is the crux of the story of Ramayana itself. I mean, if she suppressed that desire.
Not suppressed. Not suppressed. The solution is not suppression. Go, keep going. That's it?
Yes.
Okay. It's to align. She could have asked, Ram, is this your desire? Or something. So there's a desire. Does this, you get the idea? So for us, in practical application, let's say, you know, you're a well-wisher of your daughters. That is a well-known fact. So now, is your well-wishing for your daughters on behalf of yourself or on behalf of Krishna? So, for example, so you bring that to Krishna. Someone else.
Maharaj, based on this last question, so what I understood is that we don't need to suppress our desires, but we can evaluate what is the intention behind those desires and who it's going to please.
Yeah.
But oftentimes we are attached to our desires
and
trying to fulfill them. So how can we help ourselves overcome that attachment when we know that, okay, this is my desire, but actually it's not to please Krishna and it might not even be good for me.
Or it's a mix.
Sure.
Or it's a mix.
Mm-hmm.
So, application exercise number one. Take a look at it and try it. Try the application exercise number one. And that will help you get an answer to your question. It's, you know, we're responsible. Not somebody else out there is responsible. We're responsible for our own Krishna consciousness. We have teachings and we have resources, people, the holy name, kirtan, so many, Bhagavatam. And we're responsible for monitoring our Krishna consciousness. So that's an exercise to help take a look at the question you're asking. And the good news is Krishna will help us. Super soul will see, oh, she really wants to be connected with me. Let me help her. That's what's needed. Because that's the course correction. Mm-hmm. Given, it's mixed. And we want to get to the unmixed. And Krishna will help. But if you ask the question, then you're more likely to get an answer than if you don't get it, ask the question. So that's a very good application exercise. Very practical. Now, there's a question over here, and then way over by the altar. Right before you run, right behind you. Raise your hand again.
Hare Krishna. We may have a particular desire.
A little softer, please.
We may have a particular desire to progress ourselves in Krishna consciousness in our own way. Like, I feel like this will help me to progress myself in Krishna consciousness, and I may pray to Krishna that, please, Krishna, I have this spiritual desire to progress myself in Krishna consciousness, but Krishna may have his own plans to take us more closer to him, to progress, to considering our progress in Krishna consciousness. That may be not in line with my own spiritual desires, which I think. So how can I understand what Krishna wants me to progress in my Krishna consciousness? What is his desire, so that when I pray to Krishna, I can align myself with his, I can, at least I can accept his plans.
Okay. Give the microphone to him, please. Two things. In framing your question, the language that you used three or four times was progress myself. So I noticed it, in part because you repeated it. And that's a false ego phrase. You can't progress yourself. That's just a comment. Now, the essence of your question is, how do I know whether the plan that I have of what the path of progressing toward Krishna is going to look like is what Krishna wants? You have to have a plan of working towards deepening your shelter of Krishna. And you have to be very flexible. This was spoken yesterday. And I'm ready for Krishna's plan. Probably about 40 years ago, I wrote a little essay on this. And when you're making, you know, there's a, our young people here, they probably in their English class read writings of Robert Frost, American writer. Two roads diverged in yellow wood, sorry I could not travel both. Right? You've heard that one? No? Where's some other young people? Anyway. So we, in our life, there's option A and option B. The path is the path to Krishna. Here's some choice I have to make. Should I go left or right? So, if we're not clear, we can pause. But sometimes, you have to choose left or right. I mean, you can pause long for some period of time, but you have to go left or right. You know, a car's coming at you. Pause. You know, some things we have to, so when you start to make a choice of left or right, and you're not really certain that that's what Krishna wants, you keep your eyes open and you go left or you go right, ready for some signal from Krishna. Don't go that way, go this way. You're very flexible because you want to do what Krishna wants. That's part of flexibility, is being tuned into looking for signals. Super soul will give signals, and it may be the super soul gives signals from somebody out there besides, you know, from within. Could be a signal from something. It's not just because somebody says something, that's it, you know, I have to choose the other path. But so there's integrity with the intention of pleasing Krishna. That's the operative principle. And again, it's application exercise number one. Do that in a consistent manner, and it will help refine your spiritual intelligence because you've gone through that exercise. Okay? Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. There is a pastime in Ramayana where like sage Agastya would go to Lord Ram right before the battle, and he would see that like Ram is really fatigued, and you know, right before the battle, and he would instruct Lord Rama to take shelter of Aditya, you know, just take shelter of his lineage, you know, and worship the sun god, you know, to give him the strength and you know, overcome fear and basically to win over Ravana. So is that here Lord Rama is acting out of, I mean, without false ego. Is that a right understanding?
Is that, what's your punchline of your question?
Will that be a right understanding that here Lord Rama is thinking that, oh, he cannot defeat Ravana by himself. He needed to pray to the sun god to get the strength to fight.
I'm not familiar with that section of Ramayana, so I'm reluctant to comment. Sounds interesting.
So there's a stotra called Aditya Hridayam. So it's a sage Agastya telling Lord Rama to recite, you know, to get strength to, you know, fight Ravana.
Sounds interesting. Yes. I can't comment. I'm not familiar with that section of Ramayana.
Yeah, it just sounded very familiar to the theme.
Sounds similar, but I can't comment.
Okay.
Shravan, way over here.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. Thank you for the class. Maharaj, while trying to apply this namaha, negating the false ego, at the same time we have our psychophysical nature, and we are meant to engage that in Krishna service to get purified.
Yep. Yep.
How do we understand, is it included in the false ego or it's apart from false ego when we are applying this psychophysical nature?
You offer palmfuls of Ganges to the Ganges. That's how. That is to say, where did our psychophysical nature come from?
Krishna.
And we offer whatever that is to the source of that psychophysical nature in the mood of loving service. I just heard Srila Prabhupada explain this principle, specifically your psychophysical nature in offering things. And, you know, he was explaining it in terms of chapter 2, you know, acting through false ego and not acting through false ego, the varnashram system, etc. So Arjuna has a psychophysical nature, and he's declining to act according to his psychophysical nature, and Krishna wants him to act according to his psychophysical nature. But when he does so, it's not with a bodily conception or a false ego conception. He wants him to do it in pure consciousness. I forget the Sanskrit word that Prabhupada was embellishing. But, you know, in the mood of offering to Krishna. So that's the mood, not through false ego. And he specifically used the expression, palmfuls of Ganges.
Going to more details, like you explained about Lakshmana example by Lord Ramachandra building a cottage. At the same time, Hanuman giving the instruction to go find Sita, after finding he burns the whole Lanka. How do we understand, was it followed the Namaha or engaged the psychophysical nature in that sense?
Well, you know the answer. Hanuman was empowered. He had no false ego. So what he did was similar to what Lakshman did when he made the cottage suited for the comforts of Sita, although he wasn't instructed to do so because he understood the heart of Ram, or the intention of Ram, the contemplations of Ram. And Hanuman similarly was in false ego.
Thank you very much.
Details can be filled in. So, for example, tell everyone the message of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So how are we going to do that? Can be like this or like that or the other thing. That's a detail. But the principle is carrying the principle in your heart, and you then seek indication. Now back to some of these other questions of how do I know what's pleasing to Krishna? Those are, you know, we monitor the details, we don't monitor the, you know, we don't adjust the principle.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.